And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on what I guess is Tuesday night for you if you're listening on WUSB, Saturday night if you're listening on WBCQ, or any night in the world if you're listening on the internet. But here, it is Monday. I don't even know what day it is. Sometime in September, maybe the 19th, but don't quote me on it. And I'm on a boat. I'm actually on a freighter in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. And yes, I can say that now. I can say I am in the middle of the Pacific Ocean because we're pretty much halfway to the destination between Tokyo and Long Beach. So I'm somewhere out here in the middle. There's really no better way to put it. And it's really been an incredible adventure being on this thing. It's so unlike an ocean liner. You just would not believe it. Right now I'm sitting in my cabin, I guess is the best way to describe it. It's more of a suite, really. These freighters can hold up to 8 passengers. And I guess these were spaces that were used before for officers, and now they no longer need them for whatever reason. So they have extra space for passengers. But, you know, not very many people take the space because I'm one of only 2 people on this boat that are passengers. It can hold, as I said, a maximum of 8. And so we have all this space. I've got a bedroom with 2 beds in it. I'm only using one. I've got a little den that leads into it. I'm standing in the den right now. Let me walk over here to the actual room. As you can see, the doors are really solid. Everything here is very solid. I'm standing in the bedroom now, and it's pretty sizable, pretty comfortable. And here's the bathroom. Yeah, it's bigger than any hotel room I've been in a very long time, that's for sure. And a lot bigger than the accommodations I had on the Queen Mary 2. Let me sit down here by my desk. There's a whole entertainment system, there's a TV set, there's a stereo. Not much you can get on the stereo, though, here in the middle of the ocean. But there's just so much space, so much time. You can do whatever it is you want to do. If you want to read, if you want to write, if you just want to sleep all day, and I've had a couple of those. Of course, if you want a whole lot of activity, well, that might be a little bit of a problem because the people here aren't here to entertain you. They're not here to put on cabarets or little plays or gambling casinos or anything like that. There's basically 3 square meals a day, and if you're there for them, fine, and if not, well, that's just the way it goes. And it's not a big social event. People go in there, they grab their meals, and they leave, and that's pretty much it. So it takes a little bit of getting used to. And to be on this thing for 10 days, 10 straight days on the high seas, I could see it driving some people a little berserk, if you're not used to that kind of thing. I've had a lot of time to prepare for this. I've been traveling around the world since July 17th, and I always knew this would be the strangest part of the trip. The Trans-Siberian Express, not so strange. Europe and Mongolia and places like that, it's all stuff that I sort of knew what was coming. This was something I didn't really know anybody who had done this before, so I didn't know what it was like. So hopefully through me, you'll know what it's like, so that when you decide to do it, and you really should, you'll have a sense as to what it is you're getting into. The crew here could not be friendlier, more accommodating. Anything that you need, any question you have, they're there to answer it. They're very gracious as far as letting you go on the bridge, and I even have a telephone. Yeah, isn't that something? I have a telephone here in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. Hold on one moment. Hello? Hey, what's up? You want to come down? You can come down for the radio show. Okay. Okay, you remember the way, right? Okay. Well, that actually was the other passenger on the boat, and he'll be heading down here in a moment. The rooms are pretty close together. He's upstairs, I'm downstairs. I'm actually spare officer number 2, according to the door, and he is spare officer number 4. Don't ask what happened to spare officer number 1, 3, or 5. He has just as big an accommodation upstairs. I guess, you know, when this place is full, although I'm told it never has been full, it might get a little bit more cramped. but, you know, even with two people here, it's still a good amount of space. And I believe he's at the door. Hang on, let me walk over there. Ah, Ben, you found your way.
Yes,
yeah, actually, we did. We started the show.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Let me just introduce you to the folks. Why don't you grab that chair there?
Okay.
I'll grab this one here. I was just telling everybody how big this place really is as far as space and things like that. But let me first introduce you. This is Ben. You're from?
Hi, I'm Ben from San Diego, California.
I've heard of that. And you're traveling on this freighter, too? You're the only other passenger.
Yeah, the only other one. Looks like there's just the two of us, so I don't think we're going to be picking up any more along the ocean as well, so.
No, no stops at all, no islands, no birds, no nothing. It's pretty much, we saw a ship yesterday. We passed by, and there was a boat going, we actually passed it. It was going in the same direction as us. So that was kind of exciting. It really was. I mean, it sounds like it might not be exciting, but when you're in the middle of the ocean, and, you know, another boat, that's life, you know? You have 20 people, was it 20, 22 people in the crew here?
Something like that, 22, 24 or so, plus us, so.
Yeah, so that's not very many people. We haven't really had a chance to talk to very many of them, but still, any sign of life, whether it be an airplane or, you know, a spaceship, anything, it means a whole lot more out here. So we've been on the road now, or on the water since, it's kind of confusing because we started on Wednesday night, but that was Wednesday night on the other side of the international dateline. Just yesterday, we passed the international dateline, and what that means is we had two Sundays. But Ben, let me ask you a couple of questions about how you came to be here. You've actually been traveling around the world too.
More or less. I haven't traveled quite as far as you have been, Emmanuel. But I started in San Diego, but I flew to Cairo and stayed there for about 9 months to study, and then I've been trying to get from Cairo to California without taking an airplane. So similar to yours, but not quite as far.
So to get from Cairo to San Diego without taking an airplane, what kind of steps did you take?
Well, I went through, first from Cairo, I took a bus to Israel and then stayed there for about a week and then took another cargo ship, kind of like this one, to Cyprus and stayed there for 3 days. Then same line, same cargo ship up to Greece. Then I took the train to Turkey and then stayed in Turkey for about a week or so. And then took a regular passenger ferry up to Russia, rather, and then took a train right through Russia, kind of like what you did, except that I didn't go to Mongolia and China. I just went straight through Russia to Vladivostok. It's on the opposite end of Russia from Moscow. And then from Vladivostok, I took a passenger ferry to Korea, where I stayed for 3 weeks, and then took a passenger ferry from there to Japan, where I stayed for another 3 weeks, and then met you here on this ship for traveling the rest of the journey.
You actually met me right before the ship when we were getting our passport formalities dealt with, mm-hmm. and we were the only two people that the company was dealing with passport formalities, and it just seemed like, yeah, we were doing a lot of the same basic things. I think it's really amazing that we both went on the Trans-Siberian Express. I don't think we were on the same train, were we?
There's no way of that possible because you went through in August, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I was there in June. In fact, my Russian visa was only for June, July. So.
But we could have had the same pravnitsa.
Entirely possible. But now, do your listeners know about pravnitsas?
Oh yeah. Well, we've had a few, especially if you've been reading the travel log. But we had some particularly hateful pravnitsa on the way. I think it was from Irkutsk onto Mongolia. And boy, you know, actually Hanukkah got into a lot of trouble with her, and I got into trouble afterwards because we were trying to plug our laptops into the outlets. That's very bad news. And she didn't, for some reason, she had this thing about plugging laptops into the outlets to recharge them. She said something about how it could cause a fire or it was taking too much electricity from the train, as if that was even an issue. And, you know, she would go around telling Hanukkah she had to unplug her laptop. And then when she realized that Hanukkah didn't really speak Russian, she started yelling at some Germans instead, which I guess was the closest thing, telling them to tell her that she can't do that. And then I came up with the brilliant idea of hiding my laptop behind the counter, behind the curtain. And it was a really, you know, I'm very surprised that she found this because you could not see it. You really couldn't unless you were looking for it. And I guess she was looking for it. So, I got busted as far as that goes, but I got about a half hour of charge time out of it. You had something rather similar, didn't you?
Yeah, actually, the only train I was able to plug my laptop in was the Rossiya, which is their flagship train. But on the rest of them, I had some trouble. I never tried to hide my laptop, but I did try to hide my mobile phone, trying to charge that. And so what I did was I plugged it in. The way the outlets are set up, it's in the hallway of the train itself. You might be able to see some pictures on his website, I guess. But I tucked the plug beneath my lower back and sat in a chair, and I was just fiddling with my mobile, and the Provenienza walked by me, and she took about 2 steps beyond me, stopped, took 2 steps backwards, looked at me, grabbed me by the shoulder, pushed me aside, and saw me my plug plugged into the wall. She turns to me, points her finger at me, and goes, "No!" And after that, I was in a deep state of fear, tore it out, and scuttled off my room. So that's the general character of those ladies, though. I did have one man, though.
Well, we had a man too once, but it wasn't so bad for most of them. Most of them are very sweet people, very nice, you know, whatever you needed, they just stayed out of your way. I think it just takes one, though.
Lucky fella. I had one who was nice. One. The rest were, not so nice. They were government employees, let me put it that way.
But the ride itself, what do you think of the actual ride?
I expected it to be more dull than it was, but I met a lot of interesting people. You meet a lot of Russians. Not too many foreigners, I find, taking the train. So
I was surprised by that. We wound up on a couple of trains. Actually, we were on the Rossiya 2, which I think is train number 2 out of Moscow. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, we had a car that had been added at Yekaterinburg, I believe is how you pronounce it. Yeah, that's the one. Always bad with the Russian names, but they added that car there, and because they added that car, they didn't decorate it with all the gaily festooned things that train usually has. So we had the one car that was kind of bland, but other than that, you know, we admired the scenery. We bought things from the merchants whenever we stopped at one of those train stations. Did you experience that at all?
Yeah, of course, because if you don't, you starve. There is a restaurant car. I attempted to try it once, but it's a rather dreadful experience. So the majority of your nutrition on board is bought from these train stops. I found mostly I was eating dried ramen out of a cup, but also you can find these old grandmas who are selling berries and baked goods along the stations. So
they spend all day doing that. They just wait for a train of strangers to come. They sell their wares, and then I don't know what they do for the rest of the time, play cards or something?
Well, see, I always kind of assumed that they were just like old housewives and that they just sort of supplant their income with this. And I don't think they just stay there on the train station the whole time. I think they run up, they know when the trains are going to arrive, so.
I hope so. So anyway, after that, when you continued on, you went to Vladivostok. What's Vladivostok like?
Vladivostok, my favorite way of phrasing it was Vladivostok was San Francisco on its worst day. But I like San Francisco, and even on its worst day, it's pretty nice. And Vladivostok is an interesting city, but it's sort of the port town of port towns. If you know what a port town is like, I mean, it has this sort of seedy charm to it, and Vladivostok certainly has that. So it's a fun city. I didn't get to do too much in it, but just seeing it was interesting. Got lost a couple times, but that's pretty normal for me. So
is it a very big place?
Yeah, actually, it's pretty big. I think. It's a couple million, I think. It's a good-sized city. So, and you see a lot. It's pretty diversity too. You see a lot of Asian faces and a lot of Russian faces, and the cars all seem to come from Japan and have the steering wheel on the wrong side.
I noticed that a lot in certain parts of Russia and in Mongolia. A lot of cars with the steering wheel on the right side, which really makes it hard to pass other traffic when you're going down a busy, busy two-lane road. So, now, how long did you stay in Vladivostok for?
Oh, shoot. Maybe 3 days, but not 2 days. 2 days, I guess. 2 nights. And then I hopped a ferry pretty late at night and went to Korea.
South Korea, of course.
Yes, of course. They don't let us in North Korea.
Okay. Actually, side note, Hanukkah and Sasha, who have been on this program before, they went to North Korea after splitting from me in Beijing. And they had a great time. We're going to be hearing from them in a future show. They're going to tell us all about what it was like. And maybe even we'll get to see some pictures somehow. We'll figure out a way to do that. But Ben, tell us, I imagine you wound up in Seoul. I didn't see Korea this time, so I'm curious what that was like.
I was a real big fan of Korea. Very interesting country. I also liked it because it's one of those off-the-beaten-path kind of countries. Even though it's, you know, basically a full first-world country, a lot of people don't seem to visit it. And so the people you meet there are very into Korea. Seoul is a very nice city. It doesn't have a lot of character in and of itself, not like Moscow or Istanbul or New York, for example. But it's certainly got its charm to it. It's a big city. It's really big and a huge metro system, subway system. And there's a lot of Korean history there too. The capital's been there, I think, for about 500 years. Don't quote me on that. I'm not an expert, but so you can go see the palaces there, and there's a little bit of a nightlife and interesting people though.
Cool. And you spent how long in Korea?
Oh, I spent 3 weeks in Korea, but I spent about a week and a half in Seoul, and then when I first arrived, I arrived in a port city called Sokcho, which is this little tiny port city in northeast Korea, and northeast South Korea, I should say, and known for its fish. And then I went to Seoul, and then I went to another place, what was it called? Cheongchon, which is known for its jade mine. But most of the time I spent was outside of Seoul, was in another town called Gyeongju, which is sort of the cultural center of Korea, has these big giant mounds where they buried kings in back in the prehistory. It's the best fun of those, of course, is climbing to the top of them and rolling down it late at night when the authorities can't catch you. But I just said that over the radio, I guess.
That's so. What it's all about always, is just going somewhere where you can roll down a hill and not be caught.
Yeah, especially when they're big artificial hills and have a good steep incline and not a lot of rocks in them. But a lot of fun.
Did you see any of the border?
No, I didn't go to the DMZ. It's funny because I was thinking about it, but this one of the guys at the hostel I was staying at was explaining. He said it's very touristy, which I thought was kind of funny, you know, for this, you know, military border to be touristy. But I guess everyone goes to that, and I'm not too big on that. So,
well, it sounds like you saw an awful lot of the place. Now, from there, you went to Tokyo?
No, sort of. From Korea, I took a boat to a town in Japan. Well, from Busan, Korea, to a town in Japan called Fukuoka, or Hakata. And then, I didn't stay there, though. I just took a train directly to Osaka, where I stayed for about 10 days with a friend. Then to Kyoto for about a week. And then I stayed with another friend in Tokyo for a couple more days.
Now, are you meeting these friends along the way, or these people you knew beforehand?
Well, the fellow from Osaka I studied with while I was in Cairo. And the guy I met in... the guy I went to stay with in Tokyo, I had actually met in Kyoto. He was a Japanese guy. I just struck it off well with him. And he said, hey, do you want to stay at my place when you go to Tokyo? And I was like, well, of course. So I can never look down on a free place to stay. And it was really nice staying with the Japanese family, kind of getting the Japanese family atmosphere. And everyone was just the nicest. Really, really great culture in that respect. So.
Well, having just come out of Japan myself, I was floored by the hospitality people showed. We literally met a guy in a street. I guess we call him a salaryman. Those people just work all the time and go out at night. And we were doing some filming for Speakers World, and we just happened to ask this guy some questions. And he stayed around. He didn't seem to want to go after he was finished. And he told us that he was involved in some filmmaking himself, and he knew other people, and he knew a cool place we could go. And next thing we know, we're walking down these narrow aisles, narrow roads, really tiny streets that we never could have found ordinarily, even though it was in the middle of a really busy part of town. And we found this little bar that could hold maybe no more than 8 people, where he knew everybody and everybody knew him. And he's buying us drinks, and food is coming our way, and it was an amazing situation just by meeting somebody in the street that you could become so friendly with them, even though you don't even speak their language. And I just found that to be somewhat of the norm in Japan. People that you talk to would tend to really take the extra effort to make sure that you were comfortable and happy, even if you were just asking somebody for directions on the subway, which I had to do a number of times. And as a New York City native, you know it has to be difficult if you have to ask directions on the subway. It's a very complicated system, and they know that. I see Japanese people all the time looking at maps, looking all perplexed and confused. So when I asked directions, they would not only tell me the answer, and this is as soon as I found somebody who could communicate in my language, but they would accompany me to the actual point where I would get on my train so that they were assured I wouldn't screw it all up. And this was just really out of pure concern. Nobody wants anything out of this. In Japan, you don't tip, for instance. When you go to a restaurant, people are nice to you because they're nice to you. They're not asking for anything in addition. They're already paid through their wages. They don't need tips. It's not one of these situations like in Europe where if you leave an extra amount, that's fine. You know, you just round up. If you leave an extra amount, they chase after you thinking that you left your money behind. So it's such an alien type of environment for me as an American. I know that, you know, I always am suspicious of people being nice for no reason. But I guess in Japan, you just have to sort of get used to that as one of the realities of life.
Yeah, I fully agree. Actually, when you were talking about the running after you with your money, I had a situation like that. It was just 5 yen, which is about the equivalent of about 5 cents. But the guy actually ran out of the business and ran after me and put it in my hand. And I said, no, that's not necessary. But he insisted upon it. So,
yeah, it's quite a place. How would you compare Japan with Korea?
That's interesting. Technologically, they're pretty similar. It's almost like Korea is slowly becoming up to the level of Japan, but culturally they're quite a bit different. They both have that hospitality, but Korea has more of a gritty hospitality to it. It's actually more similar to Greece in a way, in that, you know, a lot of people will be quite, they might seem a little bit gruff at first, but they will still do the same kind of things in Japan where they would help you out the whole way along. So,
well, it sounds like quite an adventure. I'm wondering what spurred you on to do it this way.
You mean do it the whole no airplane way?
Yeah, just basically traveling across the world in this particular fashion.
Well, see, I had this buddy I was staying with while I was in Cairo who is really afraid of airplanes, and so he kind of went along a little bit similar to Emmanuel's route, to your route. Where he actually started in Oregon, though, and crossed Canada, and then took a freighter across to England, and then stayed in Europe for a while, and then he came eventually to Egypt. And then he wanted to do the way that I'm doing now, but he wasn't able to, but he got the spark in me, so I decided that sound would be a lot of fun. So I went for it.
And yet you were able to work it out financially? You had the time to be able to do this?
Well, time wasn't an issue because as long as I could fit it in my summer vacation, I'm a student, so I mean, it's not much of an issue with summer stuff. But financially, it seems like it'd be a lot, but because I was studying in Egypt, the cost of living is significantly lower there, and so the money I saved by doing that went into this trip.
Tell something about Egypt, what it's like to live there for so long.
Well, I love Cairo, but Cairo is it's an interesting city. Not everybody will love it. In fact, if you talk to people that have visited Cairo before, it's pretty divisive. Some people love it, some people hate it. But it's the analogy I've used a lot with a lot of people is that it's sort of like the one relative you have that's a little weird. And you know, if you saw him on the street, if you didn't know him and saw him on the street, you'd probably avoid him. Maybe even cross the street to avoid him, but if you get to know him, he's a great guy. He's a wonderful guy. You know.
So you're saying if you saw Egypt coming down the street, you might be tempted to cross.
Yeah, if Egypt personified, yes. Then you'd probably want to get to the opposite side of the street. But or not Egypt specifically, but Cairo. But once you get to know it, it's a wonderful place and it's very interesting. There's always something to do. But some people get burned out on it, though.
Well, how long did it take you to get to know it?
See, I was living in a student dorm for the first semester of my stay there, and so I was a little bit sequestered. But so I wouldn't say I really got to know it until I moved out into an apartment into regular Cairo, moved into a middle-class neighborhood. So it was that's when I really started to get to know it, I would say, about 6 months in.
And did you have any doubts in the opening part of your journey over there?
Oh, Lord, I was scared out of my mind when I first got there. I had really never traveled before I went to Egypt. So I basically just arrived in Egypt on my plane, and they had someone from the university take me to a hotel where I was staying at before I could move into the dorms. But basically, this guy just dropped me off into the middle of Cairo, which is Tahrir Square. It's this square right in the middle. And so you're just surrounded by traffic and people, and you can't really read anything, and it was a very frightening experience. But once I started getting my roots down, I was all right.
Well, I mean, I find it amazing that you say you really didn't travel before this, and here you are traveling all the way around the world, from Egypt by land and by sea, and now on the freighter across the Pacific Ocean. I mean, that's quite a jump from not traveling to traveling a whole lot. Was it difficult to make that decision, to make that leap?
Well, I figure I have to make up for the past 20 years. So it's because of being in Egypt, it makes you really feel like you could take just about anything. And then over the winter, I went to Ethiopia, which made me feel like I could take anything even more. Granted, everywhere is different in the world. So the troubles you have in Russia are significantly different than the troubles you have in Ethiopia. So, I think just my confidence went up a lot after being in Egypt for a while, and after traveling a little bit while I was in Egypt. And so after that, just decided to go for it.
Do you meet many people along the way that are doing similar things?
Somewhat. You're actually the first guy I know that's been doing something almost identical to what I'm doing, which is trying to get around without taking an airplane. But you meet a lot of backpackers, of course, especially when you stay at backpacker hostels. So I did meet one guy while I was in Turkey who was a German guy who was biking from Germany to, I think it was somewhere either in India or Nepal, and he threw Turkey and Iran. He was biking like with a, not a motorbike, but like a bicycle. So you meet some guys are even crazier than we are, I guess. So.
Now, what got you to go to school in Egypt in the first place?
Well, I'm kind of, I guess what you could call an Arabophile. I really like Arabic culture and the Arabic language. I study linguistics as well, so I guess that fits in a little bit. But basically, I wanted to study Arabic, and the only program, the only study abroad program that my university had was, for Arabic that is, was in Egypt, so pretty obvious choice.
Wow. Well, hats off to you for all the adventure. It's I don't think most people would go to this much trouble to pursue their interest, to explore the world. I mean, you've been away from the country now for over a year, right?
Yeah, over a year. I left in mid-August, and so I'll be coming back in late September, so yeah.
What do you miss the most?
Friends and family, I would say. And there's some conveniences, like being able to watch all the channels instead of having some of them, or most of them in a foreign language. Just the idea of communicating with people in your native language easily, and so I guess that's the main thing, just people.
Do you think that's changed you at all, not being able to communicate with people in your native language for so long?
A little bit. I think that my main concern is that when I come back, I'll be saying things and not expect other people to understand them around me. And so in other words, I might say something about someone while walking by them and then suddenly realize that they can understand everything I'm saying. So, but outside of that, I think it made me a little more self-confident, I would say. But I feel like I can go pretty much anywhere now, so.
I can't stop nodding. Ever since I got out of Japan, with all the bowing and nodding, every time I thank somebody now, I'm bowing my head, and I wonder if that's ever going to stop. It took me about 6 months to stop saying gracias after I left Argentina.
I know what you mean. I also started the bowing in Korea, and I feel like that's going to be going on for a while. But the worst thing was that I noticed that I wouldn't adjust to the thank you of each country until just about when I left it. So in other words, when I was in Turkey, I was saying thank you in Greek. When I was in Greece, I was saying thank you in Hebrew. When I was in Russia, I was saying thank you in Turkish. And when I was in Korea, I was saying it in Russian, et cetera, et cetera. And so, and just when I finally get it into my head that I could to say it in the proper language, I'd be leaving.
We're now on the freighter in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. What do you think of the freighter so far?
It's one hell of a lot better than the freighter I took in the Mediterranean, I'll tell you that.
What was that like?
Well, that was much more like sort of what I expected, a very much smaller room. These are like suites, seriously. There is a television, you get VCR, a radio that occasionally picks up stations.
Yeah, you know, what we did yesterday, we were playing around with this. They give us this whole little entertainment system, which isn't a whole lot of good if you can't get any TV stations or radio stations, but they have videos upstairs. Maybe we should go upstairs and look at some videos. Mm-hmm. They have a room where you can get those, most of them in German, of course, because we are on a German boat. And again, that's kind of weird because all of a sudden, after going through Russia and Mongolia, China and Japan, now I'm back to at least an alphabet I can recognize, not a language yet, but it's sort of getting closer. But they have, you know, this TV set and a radio and a cassette player, though I don't have any cassettes, and a VCR.
There's a CD player.
And a CD player. I don't have any CDs either. You have some. But it's pretty neat. Yesterday, though, we were playing around with the AM radio, and we had to sort of take apart the antenna because the way they have it set up now is not conducive to receiving anything. It just gets interference from the various electronic components. And shortly after we crossed the international dateline, a few hours afterwards, and after we had already listened to the AM radio and heard stations from Tokyo fading away, we picked up our first United States radio station.
Yeah, that was kind of creepy. That was one of the first times I had heard broadcast in English in a long time, especially hearing it from San Francisco and San Diego, two cities I know really well. So very trippy. I was kind of laughing uncontrollably.
Yeah, I noticed that, and it was, you know, kind of funny hearing them anyway. They were reading the news and doing talk radio or whatever it is they do over there. But it's a cool way to sort of get reaccustomed with your country. I've been away for a while now, not nearly as long as you, but just to turn on the radio and hear in the distance the voice of your country slowly coming out at you. And you know it's only going to get better, not the quality of the broadcast, the quality of the signal, because as you get closer, you know, obviously it's going to be easy to receive. But I was astounded that that far away, I mean, I'm not sure how far away we were, but figure just a few hundred miles east of the international dateline, we're able to pick up San Francisco. That is on AM radio at night. That's simply incredible. Of course, we can't pick it up in the daytime, and we're going to try again later on tonight. Hopefully the signal will be a little bit better.
Yeah, hopefully. I wouldn't mind picking up a few more stations. Most of my stations I listen to are from San Diego, but maybe we can pick up some of the LA ones I listen to as well. So,
you won't be getting any FM radio, you know that, right?
Yeah, for sure, but occasionally I listen to some talk radio from Los Angeles, so maybe I'll pick it up.
Yeah, we're hoping we can hear Phil Hendry or something on KFI. That would be kind of cool. We have long wave as well, but, you know, I've never actually picked up a long wave radio station. I did once, actually, all truth be told, in Sweden when I was driving a car. Or was that Norway? No, it was Norway. I was driving a rental car in Norway. That was on my famous trip to hell, hell Norway. And they had a long wave radio in the car, and I was able to pick up the BBC on that for some reason. I'm not quite sure why. They have long wave here. Can't get anything except what sounds like data in some areas. And unfortunately, there's no shortwave here. If there were shortwave, that would make things a lot more interesting. We'd be able to pick up broadcasts from all around the world. I know I should have brought a shortwave radio, but you know, I have so much electronic equipment with me, I couldn't take another piece of anything. It just was too much. Plus, you know, it's kind of cool to not have media to listen to as well. But let's walk over to the radio and see if we can pick up anything. We'll see what it sounds like anyway. Let's see. We have it's on aux. We go what to tuner, medium
okay,
wave.
All right.
See if San Francisco's coming in. Hold the. That's what we're getting most of the time. Just static. Yeah, it's not very good tonight. You can hear occasional voices. But you have to really contort yourself and hold the antenna to the window. I don't know, maybe a little later in the evening we'll pick up something. It's kind of sad when you can't hear anything. But it'll get better. So now, how have you been passing the time on this tub here?
Basically, similar way to you have, listening to this radio, watching some of the video cassettes they have, some of the DVDs.
I got a great video cassette. I picked it up a little while ago. It's Sleeping with the Enemy with Julia Roberts. Why does every film here have Julia Roberts in it? It's like being on an airplane. Every film in the airplanes have Julia Roberts in it. It's just after a while, you know, you want a little bit more. All the films here are in German, and that's okay if it's a DVD because you can watch the captioning in English, but the videotapes, it's only in German, and that can be kind of troublesome. We saw a couple of good films, though, didn't we?
Yeah, we saw a couple of them. I first saw The Man Who Fell to Earth, which was very interesting. I'd never seen that before. And Deconstructing Harry, that was nice.
Deconstructing Harry was a big surprise. For some reason, that's a Woody Allen film I've never seen, and I think it was quite good, one of his better works. You found this. You want to tell us what this is that you found in one of the rooms?
Yeah, I found this in the gymnasium on board the ship. It was the Kiribati telephone directory.
There's a gymnasium aboard the ship?
Sort of. It's just got a dartboard, a ping pong table, and an exercise bike.
Well, let's go down there right now. It's is it on this floor?
It's one floor up.
It's one floor up, okay. No, I think it's on this floor, because the recreation room, the officer's recreation room is... Let me just make sure I have my key. Wouldn't want to lock myself out of my own room. Okay, I do have my key. Let's close the door, step out into the hallway. You know, the alarm went off not too long ago, maybe 40 minutes ago or so, and that raises the dead, that sound. It was a false alarm, but still, it happens occasionally, where something has to be checked out. Okay, we're walking down the hallway, passing spare officer number one, which I believe is either a stowaway or somebody who is not in that room. Here's the gymnasium and sauna. Okay, make sure nobody's in here. We're in a gym. There's an exercise bicycle. There's a ping pong table. There's a dartboard. You know, I don't think I've ever played ping pong on the air. Do we have the equipment necessary? Okay,
indeed we do.
That's a paddle.
But I'm really bad at ping pong, so this is not going to be...
Well, trust me, holding a microphone in one hand and a paddle in the other, even if I was good, I doubt I'd remain good for very long.
Better than I am anyways.
All right. I didn't even touch the ball that time. Hang on. And plus we're moving, you know.
I don't know how you serve with one hand, but...
Well, how do one-handed people serve in ping pong? And don't tell me they don't, because they're very capable. Hold on.
Yeah, they're used to it.
There. Ha! That time you didn't get it. Well, it didn't even hit the table that time.
I'm blaming that on the rotation of the ship.
Well, hopefully the ship's not rotating. That would be... Let's see if we can get a single volley going. Oh, that time it was my fault. But look what I'm doing. I'm picking it up by bouncing it now. I'm going to try to serve like this.
Oh, a volley.
Yeah, but you hit the very possible edge of the table there. It was impossible.
Hey.
I'd have to jump across the room to get that.
Have you seen those guys flipping?
Yeah, but we're not those guys. Let's try. There we go.
Nope.
Well, you didn't make it over the net that time. Oh, boy, this is good. World-class ping pong. So I whacked the ball across the room. Oh, it's here. It came back. That's the advantage of being on a tilt. The ball always comes back. Okay, well, you know, we really can't keep the ping pong game going too much longer on the radio, but let me just try and finish it off. Did you hurt yourself?
Failed.
Hit you square in the face on that one.
No, you got me out of here.
Okay, now, that was a lot of fun, actually. What else do we have here? We have a dart. I don't think we should throw darts on the air. They probably could get hurt.
I was doing okay with the darts earlier.
The sauna, that might get the microphone damp. But we do have, for some reason, we have the Kiribati telephone book here. Now, you want to explain why that is in this room?
We have, apparently a lot of the crew are from Kiribati, and...
Hold on a second. You just said a word that I think a lot of people have never heard before. What is this place?
Kiribati, apparently, is a... So it's a couple of very small islands out in the South Pacific. I don't know exactly where, close to where, but I suppose we can figure that out later.
It's somewhere in the Pacific Ocean.
Yeah, and I mean, to give you an idea
how big could that be?
It looks like the largest island is not more than maybe 50 kilometers long, and they're all pretty thin. It looks like maybe the width of a road. But to give you an idea, the phone book is only full of 5-digit numbers, so there can't be too many of them.
5-digit numbers, imagine that.
But
this book is so small, and they list everybody by first name.
Mm-hmm. And not a lot of repetition.
No, not at all. Not at all. Look at that. And there are certain rules and regulations. Let's see if we can find one of them here. Use of official language.
Offensive language.
I'm sorry. For me, that's official. It is illegal to use obscene language when telephone services are utilized. It remains the customer's responsibility to prevent his or her telephone service being used in this way, even if relatives or friends are using his or her telephone service.
See, it can be worse.
Yeah, I guess this is something I would really have fun with. They have all kinds of interesting little services and rules and regulations. And I guess the reason it's here is because a lot of people in the crew are from this particular island.
This island chain, I guess.
Island chain.
Let's make someone famous here.
Don't give out that phone number.
Well, who's going to call him?
How about I give out every number except the last one?
Okay, this is Oberia Timon from TAB. I don't know what that's from. 2158.
All right, and that's it. Yeah, there's one more number, and if you can figure that out, you can call that person and make their lives a living hell. We're starting to run low on time, so let's walk around the ship a little bit more. It's my hope that we can make it into the bridge. With their permission, of course. Don't sneak into the bridge or anything like that. There's also a swimming pool next to here. Is that swimming pool open?
You want to duck in?
I don't want to duck into the swimming pool, but let's see if anybody's in there. Nobody's in there. It's just a pool. This equipment is not safe. Do not use.
Thankfully, it's referring to a piece of exercise equipment.
Okay. One would wonder why the exercise equipment is here then.
Well, that's why it's not in the gym.
But there's a swimming pool here. I guess we'd have to ask somebody to open it up for us if we wanted to swim in the swimming pool. Okay, so that's two of the rooms on this floor. Now, there are many, many floors in this place. Of course, they're not very big.
Bridge.
Yeah, well, let's go to the officer's recreation room for a moment.
Okay.
See what kind of videos they have for us. We're going up one flight. We were on D deck, now we're going up to E deck. And there are a number of flights below us, too, including what I saw earlier today, which was the engine room. And, boy, that was something else. If you go into the engine room, you can't hear anything, so it probably wouldn't be all that good to go in there with the microphone. Yes, we're in the recreation room now, and I want to see if there's new news printed out. Yes, U.S. doctors prepare for first human face transplant. That is the news today. What happens is the captain comes to this room, well, he actually goes somewhere else, prints out the news for today, and leaves it for us. Leaves it really for us because it's in English. And we get to find out what's going on in the world. And this is really the only way we get to find out what's going on in the world. Once or twice a day, a little sheet of paper left with the headlines. And it's kind of pointless for me to read these headlines because you won't be hearing this until well after it's old news anyway. Let's check out the video collection over here. We have videos. We have paperback books. What kind of videos do we have? Anything good?
It appears to be almost all German.
And we've seen just about all the English ones. But you say you found a new stash of DVDs?
Over here, DVDs. Check it out.
Oh, look at that. New DVDs. Okay. Hey. Where'd these come from?
I don't know. I'm guessing someone was stashing them. So.
Someone was stashing the DVDs. Okay.
We got the usual suspects, though, so I'm very excited.
Well, it's in German, but...
It's DVD, though.
It's a DVD, so hopefully they have English subtitles.
I got English speech, actually.
English speech? Do you think it's dubbed, or do you think it's the original English speech?
I guess... Well, if it was redubbed, that would be ridiculous.
Yes. And anything else? Ticker, Death is Just a Tick Away.
That's Steven Seagal.
All right.
We have Phone Booth, I believe, is the...
You know, I saw that on TV, and I'm kind of sick of it.
Okay.
A lot of phone inaccuracies in that movie.
Throw that one on.
Good Will Hunting. You know, I would watch that film, except Matt Damon's smile is just like, it scares me. It really does.
I think this one is The Bone Cat. No. What is this? It's in German, so we don't know exactly what it's saying.
Im Netzdispen. Okay, well, it sounds scary, and there's blood on the... it looks like a gunshot and blood coming from the hole in the window. Pretty much the same shot as the payphone.
Indeed, yeah. And
I wonder how many times that's been used, where there's a bullet hole in the glass and blood coming from the glass or the bullet hole.
It's very intense.
Usual Suspects, that's definitely...
That's a keeper.
Yeah, that's a keeper for sure. What's this one?
Es war einmal in Amerika. I don't know what that means.
It's got Robert De Niro in it.
Yeah, it's a Sergio Leone film, and it's got Robert De Niro.
And it's a special edition 2-disc set, which for some reason, that they say in English, everything else they say in German. And Being John Malkovich, which we saw the other night, maybe
awesome.
I should see it again
awesome.
To figure it all out, but no, it's... but that'll keep us busy for a little while. How else do you pass the time in this place?
How do you? I mean...
Well, you know, I do some writing, I do some listening to old radio shows, I do a lot of sleeping.
I've been doing a little bit of studying and reading some novels that I've been meaning to read, so...
Mm-hmm. And sometimes depth-defying things make time go by faster. And to ease the transition into that subject, I was thinking maybe we should go outside for a little while.
Yeah.
Yeah, because whenever you go outside in a place like this, it's extremely windy, sometimes cold, sometimes raining, but never hospitable. So this will be a lot of fun.
Can we get onto this floor?
I think this floor has one of the doors that actually opens, yes. And let's make sure that it opens on the other side, too, this time, because when we were doing Off the Hook the other night, or the other morning, we somehow got locked outside for a little while. Okay, now this is outside.
Not too windy today.
Hang on, watch. There's a fire hose here. That's a little of concern.
I saw that earlier.
Let's make sure that doesn't lock there. I should point out that there was this loud fire alarm that sounded only a little while ago, and it was a false alarm, but it always makes you worry a little bit. But, you know, not nearly as much as, say, if I was on an airplane and I heard a fire alarm. I don't know why, but I feel a lot more comfortable here. These people are very capable, and they really know every inch of this ship, and I don't know, it feels right somehow. Right now I'm looking, looking west, where we're coming from.
Yeah.
Looking out over some cargo containers, a whole lot of cargo containers. I think this boat can hold about 350 or so. And you can just sort of see the ocean. It's dark now, you can see the ocean behind us. Actually, you can see it all around us. But the wake that we're leaving in our trail, you can see sort of fading away in the darkness. Now, if we walk around to the side, I imagine it's going to be extremely windy. Why don't you go first? That way, you can be the guinea pig and. Well, you know, the radio audience has to be protected.
It's wet,
too. Wet and windy.
Oh, here we go.
And there's a big fire hose on the ground. It's not too windy, all right? And be careful walking over the side there. Is it possible we might actually see some stars at some point? You know, my entire trip, I've been trying to see stars, and I have yet to do it. You would think that going, what horrible shrieking noises. You hear that? Yeah, are those just container cargo vessels settling? Yeah, it's really, really slippery here. But the view is so nice looking over the edge here. You can see down to the ocean and hear those noises of things settling and scraping. The amount of cargo that is shipped on one of these vessels is something I can't even conceive of. But they move a lot. They move a lot across the oceans.
Want to go up?
No.
Oh,
I don't know what's up there.
I was hoping it'd be windier.
I'm just as glad it's not, because if it were windier, I don't think you'd be able to hear anything we were saying. But what do you think, Ben, looking out? But now we're looking east, towards our destination. We can see the light ahead, which of course is the United States. Or maybe it's the moon, I'm not sure.
Being the fact that the United States is below the curvature of the Earth right now, I'm pretty sure it's the moon.
But the United States is a mighty power. The curvature of the Earth will not stop it.
Yeah, no way.
Well, but apart from that though, what do you think, looking out, realizing you're in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, about as distant from mankind as you could possibly be, heading slowly, ever so slowly, towards your destination after so long away from home?
Now you make me feel nostalgic, but right now I'm just having like these visions of that Kevin Costner movie Waterworld, where just there's nothing left on the whole planet. You can't see anything from here, so.
I think you might watch too many movies.
That's possible, but I am on a ship where I can't do anything else. Grant.
That's true. I think we've pretty much done everything we can do on the boat. Well, of course, there's also mealtime. What do you think of mealtimes on this thing?
We have an excellent chef. He's from the Philippines, a real nice guy, and we have hearty food. It's good stuff.
Yeah, three times a day we come down for our meals. Now, let's see if we have the times memorized. Breakfast is 7:30.
Mm-hmm. And lunch is 11:30.
And dinner is 5:30.
Yeah, in fact, we have those ingrained into our brains, because if we miss them, we go hungry.
That's true. And you might notice there's a big, long gap between 5:30 and 7:30. That's really, you know, there should be another meal in there somewhere, I think. That's 14 hours without food. But it goes to show that most people here are on a regular daytime, early morning schedule. And I'm not. I've been staying up until 3 or 4 in the morning. You can get extra things. You can actually go and purchase a jar of peanuts, a soda, some beer, candy bars, things like that, and they come and deliver them to your room. They haven't charged me yet either. You can also go down to the kitchen and get some cold cuts out of the refrigerator, which is awfully nice, some juice, maybe some fruit. Yesterday, the chef brought us down to the storeroom and gave us all this fruit.
Yeah, he seems to be big on giving us stuff, which I'm pretty cool with. He mentioned earlier as well that if we want anything, don't go to the captain first, go to him, because he can give us all the free stuff and stuff like that. So
I hope we're not getting him in trouble with the captain by revealing that. But yeah, he seems to, he just says that, you know, we're not eating enough. We need to eat more. Yeah, very, very worried about us. So, you know, we're trying to keep him happy. And I have a lot of fruit in my refrigerator right now and some other supplies as well. So we're doing just great. Is this kind of what you expected the freighter across the Pacific to be like?
Yeah, the company's a little better than I thought it was going
to
be.
Shucks. You're referring to me, aren't you?
Well, not just you, but the crew as well, so don't let it get to your head.
All right.
But on my other freighter I was on, it was much more lonely. You know, probably more people, but just not as many people to converse to, and the people were a lot less nice, I would say.
This was the Greek freighter?
Yeah, the Greek freighters that crossed the Mediterranean.
And this is by no means a reflection on the Greek people and their proud heritage.
No, not at all, but a reflection perhaps on these specific captains.
This captain has been great, though. He's allowed us into the bridge any time that we wanted to go. Let me see if we actually have enough time to make it up to the bridge for this particular hour. You have just about enough time to make it up there to say hi or something. What I'm going to do is I'm going to turn the microphone off, and that way we can ask if it's okay to record in there, and we also save a little bit of time. Okay, well, we came down... Came down to the kitchen instead. What do you got there? Oh, Mr. Proper.
Meister Proper.
Okay, we're in the kitchen, by the way. We went up to the bridge, and we were hanging out there for a little while, but the guy there was kind of quiet, so I don't think it would have sounded all that good. So kitchen sounds, obviously, are more exciting, and when you find a bottle of Mr. Proper, you know, I saw advertisements for this. I think it was in Russia. Is that a Russian product?
No, it's Mr. Clean.
I know it's Mr. Clean. It's the same guy, but we don't call him Mr. Proper.
No, we don't.
In America. But is that German or is that...
No, it's Procter & Gamble.
Well, I know it's Procter & Gamble.
Yeah, but this is definitely German. It's Meister.
Interesting. It's interesting how Clean got translated to Proper in certain countries. But anyway, we're downstairs now in the kitchen. And now I'm standing in the officer's mess. And that doesn't mean that the officers made a mess. It means that that's what they call the mess hall, which I guess is where they eat. It's just called the mess. I don't know why it's called the mess hall, but that's just tradition, right? It's something to do with military. This whole thing is military-based, right?
Actually, it's more like the Navy stuff, the military stuff, is based on old sailing traditions.
Yeah, and that means that there's certain divisions here. Like, for instance, this mess hall here, which has four tables, four seats each. This is for the officers and for us, for some reason. But there's another one down the hall, which is for the crew. Now, what's the difference?
Well, it seems like on these ships, there's a pretty distinct division between officer and crew, kind of like in the military between officers and enlisted. And so basically, they even separate us for meals and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's kind of strange, but they're all very friendly. We haven't really spent enough time with the crew, I don't think. I think we should, in the next couple of days, hang out with them a little bit more. A lot of people from the Philippines, from there as well, as well as those strange islands that no one's ever heard of before.
It seems like most of the crew is Ikiribati from Kiribati.
Why is that, by the way?
Well, the captain was explaining to us a little while ago that apparently, a couple of these German shipping companies established a school in Kiribati. And so lots of the Kiribati people go through the school and then get on these German shipping vessels.
Interesting. And you learn quite a bit about their culture, their life. Hopefully, we'll be able to talk to some of them for the movie. It's just one of those surprises, I guess, you find on a boat like this. Actually, let me look for some surprises, too, in the refrigerator. Because he did say we could take whatever we wanted, right?
The
same cold cuts. You know, those cold cuts have been following us around for a long, long time.
I think those are fresh.
Are they fresh? But they're still the same. It's probably from the same animal.
Oh, yeah, indeed.
It's okay. I like cold cuts, but, you know, it's just...
I'm going to go for the cheese, actually.
Cheese. And is there anything in the... Is that ice cream still in the freezer, I wonder? No, it's not. Someone took it.
Yeah, that would be creepy.
Yeah. Well, ice cream can last a very long time. Well, yeah, if you freeze it.
Yeah, that's true.
But before you tear into the cheese, let's just step outside for a second and listen down the staircase, because that's where I went before, down to the engine room. I'm not going down to there now because it's not manned and it probably wouldn't be good, especially with alarm sounding, things like that. But you can hear the noise that it makes. Just listen for a second. Now, That's the noise, something like four decks down, with the door closed. When the door is open, you can't hear a thing. You have to have those little goggles on. Standing outside now, there's a little sign that says, adjust ship's time 1 hour to advance. Now, we've had to do that just about every night, right? Mm-hmm. Every night we have to adjust the clock ahead, and we lose an hour of sleep. Well, I don't lose any sleep, but I just sleep later. But that's indicative of our progress ever eastward. Now, if you're heading westward, you would have some of that cheese. It looks really good.
Swiss?
Yes, Swiss is very nice. Thank you. You would have gained an hour every night. What happens is when you cross the international date line, you wind up with two Sundays like we did this time, or you wind up with no Sundays, and that's assuming you cross on a Sunday. You could cross on any day, I suppose. But what's kind of interesting is that they have these little traditions here, this being a German ship. Thursday nights is cold cuts night. That's where you go and you get your own cold cuts. But on Sunday, everybody gets ice cream for lunch. And when you have two Sundays, guess what? Everyone gets ice cream two lunches in a row. Now, that may not sound like much to be excited about, but believe me, out here in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, every little bit counts. And it does improve crew morale. What would you say? You'd say crew morale here is high?
I can't really tell. People are kind of quiet.
They are kind of quiet, aren't they? And they come into this room, and they have their meals, and they leave almost immediately. There's very little conversation. We talk to the captain all the time when he's here. He always sits in the same chair. We always sit in the same chair. I don't know quite why we have to do that, because there's never more than three people in the room at once, and there's room for, I think, 16.
I've gotten in trouble for that problem before. On one of the other freighters... I was on, I accidentally sat in the wrong chair, apparently it was the captain's chair, and got a very stern lecture from this fellow on the ship, so.
Wow. Well, you haven't had any stern lectures on this ship, I take it.
Not at all. Very, very polite.
Yeah, this is very easygoing crew, easygoing boat. I've adjusted very well. How long, Ben, do you think you can go on this boat without going completely crazy, though?
I was going a little bit stir-crazy last night, so not too much longer, I don't think.
Oh, that was all the screaming and jumping up and down?
Yeah, that was me.
Ah, okay. That was quite a spectacle. It can happen. Sometimes I wonder, you know, just how much longer it's going to be. But, of course, I know how much longer it's going to be, so I don't really have to wonder. I guess you do get kind of claustrophobic sometimes. But it's going to feel really good to be back home, or won't be back home for me, but it's going to feel like home when I actually get onto the land of California, and that's a first.
Yeah. We have someone here.
Ah, hello. Yes. How are you? Oh, you're the person who sets the clocks ahead.
The watchman, yeah.
The watchman. Great. Thank you. Was 2 minutes to 10, now it's I can't tell. Is it 2 minutes to 10 or 2 minutes to 11?
It's now 2 minutes to 10.
Okay, it was 2 minutes to nine before, and this man just came into the mess hall and pretty silently moved the clock ahead an hour. I have always wondered how that happened. On the Queen Mary II, the same thing. Every night, somehow mysteriously, the clocks would all move ahead by one, and I never caught the guy who did it.
And he's like a gremlin.
I guess you just have to stand in the room with a microphone long enough, and sooner or later, somebody's going to come around and do those things that are necessary. And he didn't even notice I had a big microphone. That's been the bane of my existence since I've been traveling, is this big microphone. Everybody has been noticing it and treating me differently because of it, but not here, and that's a good thing. But you know what? We're just about out of time. This hour has really flown by, and this trip is really flying by, too. We've been on the water now for, what, 6 days?
Something like that, 5 or 6 days.
And we still have another four or so to go, and we're going to be seeing land, but still not being able to dock with the land for quite some time. Remember, we were seeing Japan for a full day after we left.
Yeah, in fact, it looks like we're going to sort of roll by the coast of California for a little while, too, from all the way from Santa Barbara to L.A., so.
Well, at least we'll be able to listen to the radio, I suppose.
Yeah, get something.
And wave at the natives and that kind of thing. next week, I'm not sure if I'm going to be back in the studio or if I'm going to be somewhere else in the United States. I guess the only way to really find out is to tune in. I want to thank Ben for joining us this hour. It's nice to meet you on this freighter, and hopefully you'll have many other occasions to travel around the world in years to come.
Inshallah.
What does that mean?
Oh, God willing. Sorry.
Ah, okay. For Off the Wall, this is Emmanuel Goldstein. We'll see you next time, this time someplace in America. Good night. We are living.